getting on the issues that matter to you.
Live from the center of Waterloo Region,
The Mike Farwell Show
on 570 News Radio.
You're on the couch, blowing up my phone. You don't want to come out, but you don't want to be alone. It don't take but two to have a little soiree. If you're in the mood, sit tight right where you are, babe. Cause I'll be at your door in 10 minutes. Whatever you got on, girl, stay in it. You ain't gotta leave the house to have a good time. I'm gonna bring the good time home to you. We'll have a
I have it on pretty good authority that there will be no cops shutting nothing down tonight because they'll be in attendance, at least one, at the big house party. If you've ever said to me in passing over time, hey, Farwell, we should get together and have a beer sometime. I'm here for it, especially tonight if you're so inclined to join me and dozens of others at the big house party in support of Habitat for Humanity, Waterloo Region. I know we'll be able to have that adult beverage together because the party happens, you see, at one of our local craft brewers. It's going to be at Schooner Street Brewing in Waterloo, and you are invited. This is your cordial invitation to be a part of tonight's big house party in support of Habitat for Humanity, Waterloo Region. If you got nothing else on your calendar, it's not too late to get a ticket. Just visit habitatwr.ca and you can get your tickets. Just $50. You get food, you get drink, you get a good time. We'll celebrate the good work that Habitat for Humanity Waterloo Region is doing, and we'll enjoy one of those beverages together. That song, by the way, in case you couldn't tell, was Sam Hunt's House Party, getting us started on the show this Thursday morning, the 24th of October. If I could begin with something like a public service announcement, I received a message from a good friend of mine who just so happens to be a farmer. And take note that this message came in just before 10 last night, well after dark, but usually, you know, it's the whole sunrise till sunset life of a farmer. But my buddy Stuart sent me the following message. I just got done bringing corn from our fields to the grain elevators. Again, think about that. 9:37 last night, and they just finished for the day bringing corn from the fields to the grain elevators. We've been at it for a few weeks now, off and on, depending on the weather. And I won't even go down the path of one of our local farmers bringing in corn from the fields when, of course, we had with the Wilmot Land Assembly the destruction of that corn crop. I'm just going to leave that there. Stuart has an important message to share. What I don't understand, his message says, is why drivers have to be in such a hurry that they are willing to put their lives and the lives of other drivers and farmers driving tractors and other equipment in danger. I have noticed it every day, all day long. I will be driving down the road in the tractor, pulling 20 plus tons of grain, and there is a double solid yellow line and people still pass. What's worse is they would pass going up a hill or even when you can't see around the corner. They have to realize we can only go as fast as the tractor allows us, usually between 20 and 50 kilometers per hour. If they pass us and another vehicle is coming from the other direction, we can't slow down very fast. It takes time. There's a lot of weight pushing us. All we ask is if you have to go somewhere, leave an extra few minutes early. It's better to arrive early than to not arrive at all. P.S. Flipping us the bird does not make us go faster. I know you have a lot of listeners. You have a great way of getting a point across. If you could pass the message on, we would all be grateful. Stuart, first and foremost, thank you for the work that you do and our fellow farmers out after 9:30 last night, still bringing in corn from your fields to the grain elevators. But to Stuart's point, He says, I have a way of getting a point across. How about this for a point? Stop being a jackwagon. Can you please? Would it be all right? How about just, here's what we'll do, okay? Here's what we'll do. We'll try it one day at a time. Today, we will commit to not being a jackwagon. And then we'll see how it goes. And tomorrow, we'll try it again. And the day after that, and the day after that. Just please don't be a jackwagon. Your appointment, your destination, wherever it is you are going, is not the most important thing in the world. Especially when it comes to your life, which you'll hear more about in the Farwell Show 5 in just a few moments. So just keep that in mind, especially when it comes to our hardworking farmers out there on the roads. They're not trying to make your life difficult. They're not trying to slow you down. They've got a job to do too. Let's stop with the jackwagonry and practice more of the patience and kindness that we're so well known for around here. The Farwell Show 5 begins as follows. Number one, ground to be broken today on Cambridge's new recreation complex. The $93 million facility will be built near Dundas Street South and Branchton Road. Construction expected to be completed sometime in 2026. Number two, a terrible crash in Toronto overnight, claiming the lives of four people. A fifth saved by nearby road workers. Police say a fast-moving Tesla crashed into a guardrail on Lakeshore Boulevard, bursting into flames, killing four young adults. A fifth person, a woman, was pulled from the wreckage by nearby road workers. Good thing they were working 24 hours. Number three on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, Ottawa set to announce a major reduction in the number of permanent residents it plans to allow to settle in Canada, in a sharp change of course as public support for rising immigration continues to wane. A senior government source says Ottawa plans to reduce permanent resident numbers from 485,000 this year to 395,000 next year. It plans to cut numbers to 380,000 in 2026 and to 365,000 in 2027. Number four, the federal Liberals attempted to show strength and unity after yesterday's tense caucus meeting, where some asked Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to consider stepping down. Trudeau was presented with a letter making that request, and it was signed by two dozen Liberal MPs, but several other MPs agreed with the Prime Minister's statement to reporters that the Liberal Party is united. And number five on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, Ontario Education Minister Jill Dunlop says the province needs more money from the feds to properly deliver the national $10 a day childcare program now and beyond the life of the current agreement. In a new letter to Canada's federal families minister, Dunlop suggests that the sustainability of the program is in jeopardy without more funding. And that is your Farwell Show 5 for this Thursday morning. Today, one day before the 11th annual Hockey Helps the Homeless tournament in our region. And one of our co-workers right here at Rogers Kitchener Radio is taking part. I think he's stretching. He's getting ready. I'm going to bring him in studio to find out how ready he is to play with the pros tomorrow. Stay with us on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. Not only did I drag him from the studio where he does the morning show with Robin and PJ on Country 106.7, but I think I interrupted his stretching, his hydration, and whatever it is that is required to be ready to hit the ice with the pros tomorrow at the Hockey Helps the Homeless tournament, Waterloo Region. PJ, good morning.
Good morning. I was doing a little bit of stretching.
Of course you
Not
were.
A lot, just a little bit. It is a lot, though. It's three games over the course of the one day, and it's a lot.
It is a lot, and I've only been there in the past as one of the public address announcers where it could fit into the schedule. And you say you're doing a little bit of stretching.
Yeah.
I'll bet you're doing a little bit of stretching now, but years ago when you started doing this, maybe not as much. Like, the years have a way of catching up to us,
PJ. Yeah, they do. It's amazing how things start to hurt when they shouldn't hurt, or you don't expect them to hurt. But yeah, it's a great group, though. It's an amazing event. I was thinking this morning, because when I knew I was coming on with you, I was like, how many years have I been doing this? And I have to calculate it based on the number of jerseys in my closet, because each year you get a new jersey and
right,
whatever.
Right.
So I think this is number six. So 6 years that I've been doing it, and I guess it's the 12th year. So.
Yeah, which speaks to, though, how much fun you're having year over year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. Anytime you get a chance. I mean, if you're a hockey fan and you like to play and you still play, regardless of your age, like, I'm certainly not the oldest guy playing, and I'm certainly not the youngest playing either. So, but anytime you get a chance to do that and have a former NHLer or former Canadian Olympian on your team, and just to swap stories in the locker room and swap stories on the bench, or see how they play, even if they're long retired, they still just do it way better than everybody else, right? It's just
absolutely
such a treat to watch.
But the truth of it is, and I know this about you, you're not too shabby a player. So you're all right. Yeah, that's a modest
way of putting
it. Okay. So you're out there holding your own, PJ, and you're watching these pros or these Olympians, mm-hmm. and you're like, that's next level stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's next level for sure. And it's funny when you see someone who's doing something that you also do, but they're doing it at a level that you never have been or will ever get to. It really is remarkable to watch it. And I think back to, this is years ago when I was working in Toronto, and we played pickup at a local arena somewhere in downtown Toronto. And after us, it was when Eric Lindros was between jobs, if you will, because he hadn't signed, he hadn't been traded, whatever it was. I think it was after he was done in Philly or before he went to Philly, whatever. He was trying to keep himself in shape, you know, before anything happened. So he rented the entire ice after we were done. And all of us came out of the locker room. We were just sitting there watching. And the stuff this guy was doing, I mean, he was like just wrist flicking shots from center ice and hitting the top corner on the net every single time. And you see it, I'm sure, with the young kids, the 14, 15, 16-year-olds that play for the Rangers and in the OHL in general. They just do it differently. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah, it's fun stuff to be sure. And, of course, with Hockey Helps the Homeless, mm-hmm. Waterloo Region, as much fun as you have and as great as an experience as it is, we're doing something really important here when it comes to the funds being raised for agencies in our community that support the homeless.
Yeah, it's great. And I think the thing that drew me, one of the many things that drew me to this, is that all the money raised stays locally. So when you're asking friends and family members and coworkers, hey, can you spare a few bucks? It's great to know that all that money that they're giving is staying in the local community. And when you can talk over the course of 11 or 12 years that you've raised over $2 million for the region, I mean, that's an amazing stat. And again, people say, well, you know, homeless, it has its own stigma attached to it. There are so many different ways you can be homeless. So many different things that can happen in your life, whether it's a loss of a job or mental health or anything that can lead to homelessness. And these different organizations locally do so much great work to help those people get back on their feet.
You talk about that $2.2 million over these last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I remember when this first started, PJ, the pledge was for four organizations locally, $25,000.
Yeah.
That's what they were guaranteed to get.
Yeah.
Clearly, we have far surpassed that. We've added a fifth organization that is supported through this tournament every year, and the beat just goes on. So it's not too late, I'm sure, to maybe throw a few bucks your way for fundraising.
Not at all. On the Country 106.7 Facebook page,
beautiful.
There's at the top of the page there, it's posted there. You can see the back of my jersey, which has Country 106.7 as my name. So, there's a link there to go to my page. And if you don't want to donate, you just want to look around and see what's there, and you can look at what the event is all about, how it's gone. There's links, or it'll take you to different parts of the page. You can see who the pros are, what we've done over the last 10, 12 years. And it's an amazing event. And tonight is the draft, where the highest fundraising teams get order of pick of who they want as far as their pro.
Who have you played with before?
Actually, every year we've played, the team that I play with, the Pillars squad, they have a relationship and have had a relationship with Gilbert Dion.
Oh, nice.
And so every year we've played with Gilbert.
He's awesome.
Because every year they draft him. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe it'll happen this year. I don't know. It's not up to me for who they draft. I leave it up to the guys on the team that have been doing it. But shout out to the teams that have already raised money so far. At least three that I know of the teams have raised over $30,000 each.
That's amazing.
So it's, again, another amazing year for raising money.
I will encourage you to visit the Facebook page of our sister station, yeah. Country 106.7. Throw a few bucks PJ's way as he's going to get back to his stretching, his hydration, and make sure you get a good sleep this afternoon, young man.
I will do that. Hey, and I can give you the link you can put up on the 570 page if you
Perfect.
Want.
Perfect. So. I will do okay. that as well.
Thanks, Mike.
Consider
Appreciate
it done.
It.
Great to see you.
Yeah, you too.
PJ of our Country 106.7 morning show, Robin and PJ, he is taking part in the Hockey Helps the Homeless Waterloo Region Tournament tomorrow.
Yes.
This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. I wonder if you heard the story this morning on All News Mornings with Christine Clark and Mark Douglas about the stolen bicycles. $21,000 worth of stolen bicycles. Six bicycles for $21,000. Look, I feel awful for the person who had their property, especially property that valuable, stolen. But I'm that guy who is trying to wrap his head around a $3,500 bicycle. I'm driving to work this morning. I'm listening to All News Mornings with Christine and Mark, and I'm thinking six bikes, $21,000. That is averaged to $3,500 per bicycle. I have bought vehicles in my life for less money than $3,500. Holy Hannah. And it just took me back to the conversation we had on the show yesterday about how that latte is impacting our budget and perhaps our future wealth, because there are so many different ways for us to be separated from our money. These are not your everyday bicycles. In fact, just to confirm, I went online this morning and checked out Canadian Tire, and you can still get a super cycle for about $300. You know, those bikes that you pedal, a $3,500 bicycle, I don't think you're doing a whole lot of pedaling anymore, right? They're the battery operated, e-assist, whatever they are fancy, and it's good. Have fancy things. You've earned the right to have fancy things. But I just wonder sometimes, like, whatever happened to a bicycle that we pedaled? Do we not do that anymore? It's incredible to me. And then the idea of a $3,500 bicycle. Yowza. All right, let's get you to the 570 News Center for an update. And then a curious case of naming opportunities for buildings in Cambridge, in particular, the Preston Memorial Arena. We'll talk about it coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is a story that starts with the Preston Rivulets. I'm sure you know of the legendary record-setting Preston Rivulets, who played more than 300 professional hockey games and won every one of them save for two. And it is the Preston Rivulets who may well be recognized, or at least members of, at the renovated and refurbished Preston Memorial Auditorium. Work is underway in the Preston area of Cambridge on that. And members of the Preston Rivulets can be remembered through the naming opportunity on the arena. But the story gets interesting, if not convoluted, from there. And I'm pleased to be joined by James Ranscombe on the show this morning. James is the nephew of Hilda and Nellie Ranscombe, members of that legendary, historic, record-setting Preston Rivulets Club. James, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. Can you start with a little bit of background of your aunts, Hilda and Nellie?
Yes, well, they played in the 1930s. They played from 1930 to 1940. They played 350 professional games. They lost two, tied one. One of the two that they lost was after a 3-day train ride to Edmonton, and everybody was sick, and they lost that game. But they were a real phenom. They were when, like, before rock and roll, there was the Rivulets. When they came to town, it was just the excitement galore. The hot dog stands came out, the balloons went on, you know, went out, and it was a big deal. And the whole thing wrapped up when the war started, when all the team players had to go to work in the factories, alas. And the naming of the new rinks in Preston was a great way to honor their efforts, and we were really excited about that.
Yeah, I can imagine that you and the rest of the family would be excited to learn that, you know, the city of Cambridge was considering using Hilda and Nellie Ranscombe as the names on those arenas in the renovated Preston Memorial Auditorium. So what was that conversation like, and how did you feel when you learned that that was an idea in Cambridge?
Oh, we were thrilled. We thought, wow, two rinks, put the Hilda name on one rink, Nell on the other rink. Hilda was a forward, a right winger, and Nell was the goalie, and they were both excellent players, record-setting, record-holding, in fact, players. And we thought that was a fabulous way to honor them. And then we got a little surprise when we were informed that that was going to cost us a bit of money. And that's where the smiles sort of dropped from our faces, and we said, whoops.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, Jim. A bit of money, $150,000 annually for Hilda and Nell's names to be on those hockey rinks.
Yeah, we started looking around, and we wondered if the Bobby Orr's family and Perry Sound had been approached to pay for the multiple namings of Bobby Orr, this and that, or similarly the Gretzky name in Brantford. These wonderful players are just, you know, acknowledged and honored because of their efforts and the way they put the community on the map. And we thought the same should be for the women players, but apparently women players have to pay for that honor of naming. Caught us by surprise, and when I spent some time in Cambridge in City Hall talking to the nice folks there about it, and while I was in the waiting room, I noticed in the activities guide that all of the venues in the town of Cambridge, the city of Cambridge, were named after men, and that, you know, there's the Edward Newland Pool, et cetera, et cetera. And we thought, well, maybe it's time to let the girls have the spotlight. But that doesn't seem to be the way it's going. And, you know, Mike, we're not really. Hilda was modest to the T. She always, you know, let the credit roll to the team when somebody complimented her for a great play or a great goal. They'd say, you're the greatest. And she would always say, the team's the greatest. And so we're hoping now that we're back. I mean, the money thing's not going to happen from our end. The Preston name can be retained. That there was a Preston Memorial Arena. The memorial name is important because of, well, poignantly now with November 11th coming upon us, it honored the war heroes from the two world wars. That the memorial name be retained. So we'd like just to inject the name Rivulets into that title of the new rinks, Preston Rivulets Memorial Arena or Auditorium, whatever they choose to do it. And that would do it for us. We'd be very happy if Preston Rivulets Memorial Arena, Auditorium, or whatever was the name that was chosen.
So even after the initial excitement at the idea of Hilda and Nell being recognized in this way, at this point, you're willing to let that go, but your hope is that the Preston Rivulets get recognized as a team.
Well, yeah, yes. We, you know, I think over time that under that banner name, that perhaps Hilda will be one rink. They'll need to call it Rink A or Rink B. They might as well call it the Hilda or the Nell. But if that doesn't take place, at least the Rivulets name will be up there on the wall. And there's a plaque Mike, there's a bronze plaque from Heritage Committee Canada out there honoring the rivulets, and especially Hilda. And it'll just be very fitting for that Preston Rivulets Memorial Arena to be behind that brass plaque and standing in all its glory.
So where are you and the family at with all of this right now, Jim? Are you making any traction on the Preston Rivulets Memorial Arena, for example?
Well, we're taking our lead from the internet, and people there are liking the Preston inclusion of the Preston name. Even that may be a bit of a hard sell, but we're hoping that all the whole handle holds. But we're resigned to it. We're happy that the rivulets are getting their name up there. If somebody Googles a rivulet, first thing they're going to find out about is the phenomenal athleticism and hockey skills of these wonderful women in my family. It definitely has skipped a few generations, but anyway.
How would you feel as the city moves forward with naming opportunities if it became the Tim Hortons Preston Rivulets Memorial Arena?
Well, they have to do what they have to do. I know that it's a big, expensive project, and if the city needs to, you know, raise a few bucks, more power to them. And we did some math. It's $1 per citizen per year to cover this out of the city's pocket if they just wanted to keep it clean without corporate naming, because we know that if it's a Tim Hortons, there'll be Tim Hortons product on site, and there'll be logos galore. And I'm not sure that, you know, Tim Horton was the kind of the athletic embodiment of excellence, you know, that these girls were. They were at the very, very top of their game, outscoring Gretzky, outscoring everybody. I mean, they were a phenomenal thing.
Jim, I really appreciate you making time for the show this morning and sharing the story. And thanks for keeping the memories alive of both Hilda and Nell, and of course that tremendous Preston Rivulets team. Thanks for this.
Thanks, Mike. I think the Preston community is very much behind this, and we're hoping for the names to do what we want it to do, and that there you go.
We will continue to watch with interest. Thanks again.
Thanks for covering it, Mike. Thanks so much.
Cheers. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too.
Jim Ranscombe is the nephew of Hilda and Nellie Ranscombe, members of the legendary, historic, record-setting Preston Rivulets. What I've struggled with in this story since it was first shared with me, I did a double take because I thought, what a great idea, like a great idea on the part of the city of Cambridge to memorialize the Preston Rivulets in this way, and specifically Hilda and Nellie Ranscombe. I think it's a great idea. And consider, I mean, all of the other buildings in Cambridge, the Alan Reuter Center, also in Preston, the Edward Newland Pool, also in Preston. I don't think that the Newland and Reuter families are continuing to pay the freight for those names being on those buildings. And I'm all for, make no mistake, I'm all for naming rights. I am. I think sponsorship opportunities like this, just like I think putting banners on trains and buses in this community to generate revenue over and above what we generate through taxes, I think it's a great idea. I'm all for the naming rights. What I can't figure out is why the city of Cambridge would go to the family and say, we'd like to recognize your aunts, Hilda and Nellie, as we renovate the Preston Memorial Auditorium. But then you as the family pay the $150,000 a year for that. Am I the only one that's missing this here? If you want to go Toyota, which is sponsoring the new soccer complex, if you want to go Tim Hortons, whatever, fine. Like, it can be the Toyota or Tim Hortons Memorial Auditorium in Preston. I'm okay with that. The fact that you went to the family, though, and then said to the family, they should pay for this. I'm fairly certain, like 99.9% certain, that the Cardillo family is not paying for the Dom Cardillo Arena in Kitchener, which is the main arena where the Kitchener Rangers play. The building is the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium. Then you've got the Kinsman and Kiwanis arenas. And then you've got the Dom Cardillo Arena, named after the former mayor. If I'm mistaken, let me know. I don't think the former mayor's family is paying for that naming honor. You do that to recognize people who made significant contributions to your community, a la Hilda and Nellie Ranscombe. So why on earth would the city ask the family to pay for, at $150,000 annually, the naming rights? You put the name of the family on there because the family is worthy of recognition. And we can get into the whole thing about naming this, naming that, erecting this statue or erecting that statue. But I think that's separate. What I can't quite understand is why the city would ask the family to pay for the naming right. You put the name on the building because the family did something significant. Or maybe you see it differently, which is why I always ask you the question, should the family be asked to pay for the naming rights to the building? This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio.
Wondered if Bobby Orr's family and Perry Sound had been approached to pay for the multiple namings of Bobby Orr, this and that, or similarly the Gretzky name in Brantford. These wonderful players are just, you know, acknowledged and honored because of their efforts and the way they put the community on the map. And we thought the same should be for the women players, but apparently women players have to pay for that.
Jim Ranscombe, and that is the crux of the issue. Jim is the nephew of Hilda and Nell Ranscombe, who were members of the historic record-setting, unparalleled Preston Rivulets hockey team, which some 100 years ago demonstrated its excellence night in and night out on the ice. And the Ranscombe family was approached by the city of Cambridge with the idea, as the city of Cambridge undertakes a renovation and refurbishment expansion at the Preston Memorial Auditorium, the Ranscombe family was asked if they would be interested in having Hilda and Nell recognized as the names on the two rinks in that arena. Of course, the family would be overjoyed by that until they found out they would be required to put up the $150,000 annual fee for the naming rights. Again, I have no issue with naming rights. I think it's an excellent way to generate necessary revenue for cities that are struggling to generate revenue. And this is different as well from a hospital, for example, where if you've ever spent any time in any hospital, you'll see the names of families and what they contributed to that particular area of the hospital in all kinds of places around the facility. But that's the trade-off, right? The family or the individual makes this generous donation, and in exchange, as a way of thanks, they get recognized on a donor wall or in a sitting area or a chapel, whatever the case may be. This is entirely different. This is the Preston Memorial Arena, and the idea that this family, these two women who were premier hockey players of their time, the city says, well, we want to recognize them. We want to put their names on the arena, but we should get the family to pay. Like, it just, and as you heard Jim Ranscombe say right there, was that the question asked of the Gretzky family in Brantford or the Orr family in Parry Sound? I'll ask again, is the Cardillo family paying to have the Dom Cardillo Arena naming right in the city of Kitchener? No, unless I'm mistaken, but I'm confident that I'm not. The Cardillo family doesn't pay for that. Carl Zaire Square outside Kitchener City Hall. Is the Zaire family paying for the? No, you do that for people of note who have contributed to your community. Hilda and Nell Ranscombe contributed to the Preston Rivulets and the success that that team had and the historic nature of what that team was able to do. You don't ask the family. You don't ask the family to pay for that. You do it because it's the right thing to do. And Jim makes a great point when you look around the city of Cambridge at all of the other buildings that have names on it. And I know this isn't a time before we got into naming rights, but boy, oh boy, there are an awful lot of men recognized on the fronts of those buildings. Why is it different for Hilda and Nell Ranscombe? I find it very confusing. George is on the phone with us this morning. Hey, George.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you doing there?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. As a resident of Cambridge, I'm very embarrassed that they actually did that. I don't understand why they would, that thought process would be, hey, let's go ask a family for $150,000 while we honor their relatives. I just think it's wrong. They should do the right thing. I know Nicholas very well in Cambridge. I'm surprised he didn't talk some sense to the council and not do that. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
All right, George, appreciate that. Embarrassed is a good word for it. I can't see why the city would have gone in that direction. Harold, good morning.
Good morning. It's insane for the city to ask them to pay for putting their names on the building. I mean, we name places have names on them for, like, companies when they're advertising for it. Like, that's why the building where the Leafs play has changed its name a few times.
Absolutely.
Different people have paid for it. That makes sense. They're using it for advertising. You don't ask somebody that you want to honor to pay for it. That's really not honoring them.
That's a great way to put it, Harold. I mean, just imagine what are we going to do with every street that's named after an historic family in our community? This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. Time to get you to the 570 News Center for your 10 o'clock update. And then Ontario's big city mayors talk about involuntary treatment. Is it a direction we have to move as a province? That conversation coming up on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio.
This is where today's topics turn into today's talking points. It's local and it's democratic radio at its finest. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio.
If I look out my window every day, I see people in the throes of addiction. I see how they have no capacity to make decisions for themselves anymore. And I thought, they don't want to live this way, but they can't make that decision anymore themselves. They're beyond that point. We wanted to update the Mental Health Act and the Healthcare Consent Act to determine whether to expand the scope of and strengthen the existing system of mandatory community-based and residential mental health and addictions care and treatment. And then to review, consult on, and update the Trespass to Property Act to address the public safety issues municipalities are facing with our communities. With such a review, it's to include but not be limited to options to assist our communities in addressing aggressive or repetitive trespass, which, as you all know, we are facing every day.
The Mike Farwell Show continues
on 570 News Radio.
And that is Cambridge Mayor Jan Liggett, who in her capacity as the mayor of a municipality of greater than 100,000 people was in attendance last week at the Big City Mayor's Caucus, Ontario's Big City Mayor's Caucus. And at that meeting, as we discussed on the show yesterday, a motion was brought forward calling for legislative changes that would allow for a system of mandatory community-based and residential mental health and addictions treatment facilities. Ultimately, that was softened to a degree. The bottom line is there is an appeal to upper levels of government, particularly the provincial government, for support in our municipalities, along with Cambridge Mayor Jan Liggett, Guelph Mayor Cam Guthrie, Kitchener Mayor Barry Verbanovic, and Waterloo Mayor Dorothy McCabe at that Big City Mayor's Caucus meeting last week. And Mayor McCabe joins our show this morning. Good morning, Mayor McCabe.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Fighting a little bit of a cold. I call it my post-Oktoberfest hangover. That's real Oktoberfest hangover. Is it cold?
I believe it. There's been some.
So many
yep,
people.
Exactly. And there's something going around, and you betcha. You get out there and enjoy some Gemütlichkeit, and you have the cold to follow. Thanks for making time for us this morning.
Absolutely.
So, what was your takeaway from this conversation around mandatory or involuntary treatment at the Big City Mayor's Caucus meeting last week?
Well, it's. It was a really interesting and very fulsome discussion, and we extended the time that we had scheduled and actually had to defer a couple of other items on our meeting agenda because we wanted to, people wanted to continue to talk about this. So I think it was an important discussion to have. However, my concern from the get-go, and I shared this with the people who had drafted the motion in advance, was that, you know, the system right now currently does not have enough funding in the system for people who are seeking, you know, for people who are seeking treatment voluntarily. So if you're trying to, if you have a teenager or someone in your family who is actually seeking, saying that they know they have a problem or they know they have an addiction and they're looking for support, it's months before you can get that person into treatment. And so we need a system, and we need funding in the system and the capacity in the system to, you know, to address that. That's what I think should be the priority, because people are waiting far too long when they do put their hand up and say, hey, or you see someone slipping into that down that road. That's where I really think that we need to focus. And that's why I was a big supporter, or I continue to be a big supporter of the Solve the Crisis campaign. And that's why, and so, you know, we continue to call for, to the provincial and the federal governments to say, sit down with us, establish an action table, give us a minister, one point of contact where we can talk to them and say, this is what we need now. Like, let's negotiate and talk about that. I think starting to go down the road of talking about involuntary treatment and the notwithstanding clause is a real red herring and a slippery slope, because that's not going to get us, that's not going to give us the help we need today in our communities.
So what does give us the help that we need today then? Enough beds to support all of those who voluntarily are seeking treatment? Is that the solution here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert in mental health and addiction. I'm not an expert in housing and homelessness. And you know what? And with all due respect for mayors across the province, that's none of, unless they came from that sector, none of us are, right? So this is why we really need to sit down with provincial and federal partners and say, this is what we're seeing in our community. Let's bring people to the table who can provide us really good advice. And what I've learned and what the Solve the Crisis campaign is focused on is saying, let's get some money into the table and coordinate the action that we need. So from what I understand, we need is more beds. We need 24-hour community hubs and crisis centers. That would relieve pressure on our hospital emergency departments and our first responders. We need obviously some operating funds to go with that to support the experts and the people who would be working in these 24-hour community hubs. And, you know, to sustain this, because this is not a short-term fix. We're going to need this support for, you know, a number of years to get. We also need funding to support the building of more supportive housing to get people those wraparound supports they need. And you know, we recognize that the province did say they're starting these heart hubs, and they're going to be investing money to build 375 supportive housing beds over 4 years. But as I said before in the show, Mike, we know in Waterloo Region alone we need 375 supportive housing beds, right? Or maybe more, right? So it's a start what the province is doing with that supportive housing beds piece. But you know, if we need that many in Waterloo Region alone, I can't imagine how many Toronto needs or Ottawa. So we believe that listening to experts in our local communities, that we have a better sense of what our communities need to support the people in our community. But we need the province particularly to sit down with us and have these difficult conversations and, you know, and give us the money that we, some of the nonprofits and the housing groups and the mental health and addictions, the Canadian Mental Health Association, they need more funding to address this.
I loved your point earlier, Mayor McCabe, about the experiences that these big city mayors bring to their roles or the lack thereof when it comes to dealing with issues like this, mental health, addiction, etc. I think that's a really important thing for us to remember. And then with that in mind, we probably understand where this comes from in the sense of frustration that they see problems in their city that they have or they feel as though they have an inability to properly address. Would that be fair?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like no one's arguing the severity of this issue, and certainly some communities have that you know, are seeing it far, far worse than certainly I see in Waterloo. But I have to, and I empathize with that, and I empathize with every single person and the families that are behind them, like the people who are on the street, and you know, very likely that's not the life that they wish to lead, but. But I haven't heard any experts calling for involuntary treatment and the use of the notwithstanding clause, right? Like what I've heard experts call for is ongoing money that goes into systems like Canadian Mental Health Association and like, you know, building supportive housing units, you know, like SHO and some of those other groups. Those are the people who are saying they can really find solutions and deliver really good care for people and get them off the street and get them the support they need and the housing they need so they can, you know, hopefully turn their life around to whatever degree that's possible. I mean, look, we, like I said, we all know that this is a real problem and the scale of it is has certainly far outstripped anything I think that anyone in our communities ever imagined it would get to. But I think if we really focus on this Solve the Crisis campaign and get the federal and provincial government to an action table where we can have these conversations and work out the solutions, I think we'll be in a far stronger place.
Mayor McCabe, I appreciate you making time for the show this morning. And here's to a speedy recovery from that cold that's nagging on you. Thanks very much.
Say, with all disclosure, I'm going to the big house party tonight, so... So, you know, it's the appropriate time to be wearing a mask because it's Halloween, but I guess I'll see you there.
I look forward to that. And you know what? A little bit of alcohol never hurt anybody trying to fight off a virus. I'll just point that out.
Medicinal, I think.
Exactly. All right, I'll see
you. And hockey helps the homeless. I'll probably be there too.
Oh, my gosh. You've got a busy agenda tonight.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Well, we'll see you at the big house party.
Time,
thank you very much.
It's an important discussion and one I guess we'll continue to have.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time, Mayor McCabe.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dorothy McCabe is the mayor of Waterloo, and she shares with us her thoughts on the outcome of that big city mayor's caucus meeting last week. As I said, the call was for legislative change that would allow municipalities, by invoking the notwithstanding clause, or the province itself, to move people into mandatory, forced, involuntary is the nicest word we use, treatment. As Mayor McCabe says, and that was not passed to the full strength that it was originally tabled, that motion. Things were eventually softened to look a whole lot more like the Solve the Crisis campaign that Mayor McCabe alluded to, and we've talked about on this show before. Solvethecrisis.ca, if you want to learn more about it. There is a homelessness and mental health crisis happening on our streets. Ontario's cities cannot solve it alone. I do not disagree with any of that. I think Mayor McCabe brings forward an interesting point. How can we be talking about involuntary or mandatory treatment when we don't even have enough space and or support today for people who voluntarily wish to seek treatment? So what's the right step forward here? Would you like to see involuntary or mandatory treatment here? We know the problem is as big as it's ever been. It's not moving the numbers in the right direction. Where do we begin to solve the crisis? Your thoughts always welcome on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
I'm not an expert in mental health and addiction. I'm not an expert in housing and homelessness. And you know what? And with all due respect for mayors across the province, unless they came from that sector, none of us are, right? So this is why we really need to sit down with provincial and federal partners and say, this is what we're seeing in our community. Let's bring people to the table who can provide us really good advice.
Dorothy McCabe is the mayor of Waterloo. Waterloo is a municipality of greater than 100,000 people, so Mayor McCabe was one of 29 mayors at last week's meeting of the Ontario Big City Mayors Caucus. And at that meeting, a motion was brought forward for legislative change provincially to direct people struggling with addiction and mental health issues currently living on our streets into mandatory, forced, or the softest word we use for this, involuntary treatment. 519-570-2545. Star 570, 1-800-570-5715. Now, while that motion was discussed and debated, and as you heard Mayor McCabe say, even deferred some other items on the Big City Mayor's Caucus agenda last week because it was such a robust discussion. And there are so many viewpoints on it. I know for certain that the mayor of Oshawa has had it up to here with this. The mayor of Kingston has had it up to here with this. I get the sense that it's a similar sentiment in Barrie and London, for example. But what you just heard in that clip from Mayor McCabe, I think is important. These are municipal leaders who are not experts in the crisis. And one thing I know for sure, one thing I absolutely know for sure, the upper levels of government are not doing their part on this. They're really not. And Paul points out very well in an email to Mike at 570news.com. Maybe if the provincial government wasn't spending taxpayer money so frivolously, there would be more for these social programs. By frivolous, I mean $1 billion spent to get alcohol into convenience stores ahead of the next provincial election. What about the $200 rebates, which will add up to more than $3 billion? We're talking billions with a B, dollars here, when the pledge on heart hubs is less than $400 million. So you've got about 10 times that amount just from the two issues that Paul mentions in his email to Mike at 570news.com. The acceleration of alcohol into convenience stores and breaking that contract with the beer store, and the rebate checks that are coming out early next year. If you've got those billions provincially, couldn't you invest them in more robust mental health and addictions treatment centers? I would hope so anyway. Let's go to the phones. Carol, good morning.
Good morning. I think one of the things that Mayor Dorothy might have missed is the fact that, as she is well aware, we can offer all the services we want under current mental health rules. They're allowed to turn them down.
Yes.
And I think when they suggest that they need mandatory treatment, everybody assumes that means drug withdrawal. It may not. Most of the people that are causing the majority of the problems on the street are the ones who have turned down multiple helpful services.
Are you sure? How do you know that? Because this is the thing, Carol, like, honestly, when I heard Mayor McCabe make that statement, I thought it's a pretty interesting way to look at it. Like, what if we had enough spaces for everybody who voluntarily wanted the treatment? What might that leave the state of our streets if people who wanted it could get it?
If the people who want it could get it, I agree with that.
Right.
But I'm also...
But what do you think that would make the streets look like then? How much do you think that would change things?
As long as people can still have the opportunity to say no when they lack the mental capacity to make a reasonable decision,
I understand
we're still going to have problems.
Sure.
And I believe that's what's behind this request to revisit our Mental Health Act.
No, I understand where you're coming from with that, Carol. All I'm asking then is if we were to ensure that there were enough spaces for those who voluntarily wished to take advantage of them, how would that leave things? And maybe that, like, almost seems like a logical first step, right? Let's see what the landscape looks like then when we have enough space for everybody who voluntarily wants the treatment, and then decide what the next step looks like. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. I know the issues of homelessness and addiction are burning issues, and the idea of involuntary treatment for those suffering from mental health issues and addiction issues does have some support beyond just the Big City Mayor's Caucus. I know. And so, Carol, I'm sorry we didn't have more time before. And Mary and Lisa, I would love to talk to you, but I just don't have the time right now. The show must move forward. But if you make a little note to yourself, you call back at noon during our talk back hour. I'll get you through first at that time, please. Carol, Mary, Lisa, and we'll have the conversation about involuntary treatment. Would love to hear your thoughts on it when we have the time to do so. Right now, I've got to get you to the 570 News Center for an update. And then Gary Chalk joins us with Living Retired, the Lousy Listener Edition. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio.
Ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling.
Every Thursday morning at 10:30, we get hooked on the feelings of laughter with our good friend Gary Chalk, who writes the humor column Living Retired. You can find it online, livingretired.press. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter. The column will be delivered directly to your inbox, and then you can start your week with a little chuckle and Gary's Living Retired column. Gary makes time for our show Thursday mornings at 10:30. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike with a mic.
Mike with a mic is right here, and you too have spent in years past time in a radio station much like this one on a microphone, and you must know like everything not only about radio but about music and all of the lyrics to all of the songs that you ever played in radio.
Well, I tell you, Mike, you're right, and I've been reflecting since I've been living retired. You know, you get extra time on your hands, and you do things, and I write my column and things like that. But I was thinking back to my very first song that I played on the radio, Neil Diamond's Cracklin' Rosie. Do you remember the first song you played?
The first song I played on the radio. That's interesting. No, but I do remember, and this is when I was working in Brantford, playing Dreamboat Annie an awful lot because it helped us time out to get to the top of the hour at the right time. It was the perfect length if you need to squeeze in a short one.
Oh, we all had those songs, didn't we?
Yes,
hey,
we did.
Hey Jude was the bathroom song.
Absolutely.
You know, we all had those ones sort of sitting over to the side, and when you needed them, they were there for you.
Absolutely. So Cracklin' Rosie, eh? Neil Diamond, you say?
Yeah, and actually what I've done is I've been working away, and I've developed what I think is, well, I'm calling it the Living Retired All-Time Lousiest Loser Lyrics. There's a lot to choose from. and so I've got my top six. The sixth one is actually a Neil Diamond song back in 1971, and it's a very popular song. I quite like it until I listen to the lyrics.
All right, well, have a listen.
Well, I'm New York City born and raised, but nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA's fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine no more. I am myself.
Okay, hang on a second.
I said,
you're right. Lovely.
Yep.
Not even the chair, Gary?
It rhymed. It rhymed with there. I'm telling you, Mike, there's money in music. You and I can put our heads together and we could come out with something stupid. Well, sorry, that song's already recorded. But, you know, like, I can't believe that. Of course, the one that everybody remembers is Richard Harris.
Yes.
1960. Everybody talks about MacArthur Park.
MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark. All the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Oh no.
Tell me that Richard Harris is not singing a song about a cake in the rain, Gary. Tell me it ain't so.
Well, it is so. Sorry to break it to you there, Mike. Yeah, but, you know, made $1 million.
We got into the wrong business, Gary.
What we do, this shows how silly we are in the radio business, we promote the music to make them money for lyrics that are just ridiculous.
Those are among the most ridiculous I have ever heard.
Well,
those would be the song.
Okay,
I will. I'm holding on.
There's more. The next two are from the country music genre, and I don't know, country music seems to have a lot of those types of lyrics that, well, here's one. This was in 1978. Two people, L.E. White and Lola Jean Dillon, wrote a song, and I think, well, I'm convinced it's a love song. Let it go there.
Hang on a second. Okay, yeah, I got you. It's a love song.
Well, you're the reason I've changed to beer from soda.
And you're the reason I never get to go to the beauty shop.
You're the reason our kids are ugly, little darling. Other looks ain't everything, and money ain't everything, but I love you just the same.
Gary, are you sure this is a love song? And not a divorce song? You're the reason our kids are ugly.
Well, could be. I just sort of thought, imagine, Mike, when you got married, and after the reception, it's time for the first dance. And the mother of the bride is sitting there, and she's got her corsage, and she's wiping her nose with her tissue. And the first song comes up, and you and your brand new wife dance to You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly.
Gary, you know, if you play country music backwards, you get your truck back, you get your dog back.
Oh, dear. There's another one, Dan Hicks. You may remember this one. It goes back to 1998. And again, well, this can't be divorced. This has to be a love song. It was Dan Hicks who wrote it, and he said, "How can I miss you when you won't go away?"
I've talked to your mother and I've talked to your dad. They say they've tried, but it's all in vain. I've begged them, I've pleaded, I've even got mad. Now we must face it, you give me a pain. How can I miss you when you won't go away? Keep telling you day after day, but you won't listen. You always stay and stay. How can I miss you when you won't go away?
Oh, you know what that one reminds me of? It reminds me of WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yep.
And Johnny Fever was playing a rendition of How Can I Miss You If You Won't Go Away.
Oh, what a show. What a song. I tell you, Mike, this is good stuff. And these songs, they just fall on our laps, all these silly lyrics. Like another one I was thinking of just before we came on, Roger Miller, he had songs like Dang Me. He had another one called You Can't Roller Skate in a Buffalo Herd. But the one that he had, it was a title. It was called If You Won't Be My Number One, Number Two on You.
So... Gary, we ought not be giving an audience to such things. I don't know, right? But they just, all these decades later, we're still talking about them.
Still talking, still singing them. And sometimes in the older songs, which we'll get to, when I explain them to my kids, Tyler just looks at me.
I can't believe there are two that might even have lousier lyrics than the lyrics we just heard. But hang on, Barry Mann and, yes, the Trash Men are still to come. Gary Chalk is with us. He writes the humor column Living Retired, joins us every Thursday morning at 10:30 to bring it to our program, Barry Mann, the Trash Men, and the lousiest lyrics of all time. Continue on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. Thursday mornings, 10:30, Gary Chalk joins us on the show. Gary writes a humor column called Living Retired. You can find it online, livingretired.press. And while you're on the site, you can sign up for the weekly newsletter. Delivery comes right to your inbox. You can have a chuckle at Gary's musings. And some way, somehow, we are going to find lousier lyrics than those contained in the songs I Am, I Said by Neil Diamond, MacArthur Park by Richard Harris, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly by Conway Twitty and Loretta Lynn, and How Can I Miss You When You Won't Go Away by Dan Hicks. Are you telling me, Gary, that there are lousier lyrics than those contained in the songs we've already heard?
Yes, Mike, I am telling you that the living retired all-time lousiest loser lyrics has a couple of, these topped the charts.
Okay, before we get to them, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Sure.
But I'm curious, when you write, do you listen to music in the background? Does it help you get those creative juices flowing?
Well, on this one I did, and then that's Jan. She kept calling down from upstairs. I was in my basement off. She said, turn the thing down. I can't hear myself think. And, of course, some of the songs I were playing, like I was playing this one. I'll just quickly go over the lyrics here because, you just want to make sure your ears aren't failing you when we talk about four musicians wrote this: Al Fraser, Carl White, Sammy Harris, and Turner Wilson Jr. And the lyrics that they crafted go as follow: Awella, everybody's heard about the bird, bird, but bird's the word. Awella, awella, bird, the bird is a word. Awella, and that's it.
No, Gary, that can't be a thing.
That's the whole song, 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Oh, well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird. Bird's a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird, bird. Bird is a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird, bird. Bird's a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird. Bird's a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird, bird. Bird's a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a word. Oh, well, a bird, bird. Bird's a word. Oh, well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is a word. Oh, well, a bird.
You know, I enjoy music, Gary. I really do. All kinds of music. Classical, rock and roll, even a little bit of country. I don't know what that was.
All I know, if you watch the video, I'll just leave it with the listeners. Google Surfing Bird by the Trashmen and see the video. And this guy sort of dances, I guess it is. One guy, and that's his whole gig. I'm imagining his parents when he decided that I'm going to drop out of college and I'm going to, create a band. We'll call ourselves the Trashmen.
It seems so fitting. It's so, yeah, and they pulled one over on us, didn't they? I bet you the Trashmen got together one night, had more than their share of wobbly pops, and came up, Eureka, Surfing Bird, that's the winner.
And then they took the next 2 minutes and wrote the song.
Exactly. And there it was, bird, 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 the name is the bird. Okay, we've got one more on our list, Gary, of the lousiest song lyrics, the living retired lousiest loser lyrics.
This one, Barry Mann, he was a famous writer, my goodness.
Yes.
Some of the stuff he wrote, but then he wrote this one. And again, Mike, I go back, and I hate to bring you and your wife into this, but just imagine if you wanted to sing these lyrics, because they go like this. I'd like to thank the guy who wrote the song that made my baby fall in love with me. So, that you're thanking. But imagine, this is what the guy sang that made your wife say, yes, Mike, let's get married.
Thank you, Barry Mann.
I'd like to thank the guy who wrote the song that made my baby fall in love with me. Put the bomb in the bomb, bomb, bomb. Who put the rhyme in the ram-a-lam-a ding dong? Who put the bop in the bop, shabop, shabop? Who put the dip in the dip, 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 dip? Who was that man? I'd like to shake his hand. He made my baby fall in love with me.
What I'm thinking, Gary, is that back in the 1950s, 60s, you didn't need to make any sense, right?
Well, and I think you're giving too much credit, Mike, when you said you're thinking.
if you can incorporate ram-a-lam-a-ding-dang into your song lyrics, though, come on.
I'm telling you, somebody managed to do it. And there's other lyrics. There's two songs that, I don't know. Remember the Sting, Sting and the Police? He had something called da-do-do-do-da-da-da-da.
For sure, yeah.
Right? Yeah, and, that, and that's all it was. He said, da-do-do-do-da-da-da-da is all I want to say to you, da-do-do-do-da-da-da-da. Now, I'm not saying that they were plagiarizing, but there's a song very familiar to that, which was called da-do-ron-ron. Okay, and their lyrics basically were, I met him on a Monday, and my heart stood still, da-do-ron-ron-ron, da-do-ron-ron. Somebody told me his name was Bill, da-do-ron-ron-ron, da-do-ron-ron.
Wait, was his name Bill or was his name Ron, Gary?
That's what I can't figure out.
So I think what you're telling me and what I have learned here today is that even when I'm living retired, the lyrics will make no more sense than they did the first time.
None whatsoever. And you know what, Mike? We'll enjoy the songs just as much.
We certainly will, as we've enjoyed this conversation just like every Thursday morning. Thank you, my friend.
Take care, Mike. Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye. Gary Chalk is the humor columnist behind Living Retired. You can find it online, livingretired.press. And today we present to you the Living Retired Lousiest Loser Lyrics on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Thanks to Sean for the email to Mike at 570news.com following up our lousiest loser song lyrics with Gary Chalk on Living Retired today. Gary and I discussed such gems as I Am, I Said, MacArthur Park, You're the Reason Our Kids Are Ugly, and How Can I Miss You When You Won't Go Away. Sean says, don't forget Wayne Kemp's classic, Your Wife Is Cheating on Us Again. It's stuff that you just can't make up. Thanks for the email, Sean. To Mike at 570news.com, glad you enjoyed the segment with Gary Chalk, Living Retired, which we do every Thursday morning at 10:30. Something else we do on Thursday mornings at 11:30 is we take a break from some of our heavier topics, have a little bit of fun on a segment we call The Flip Side. And inspired by Gary's lousy lyrics this morning, we thought, wouldn't it be fun to revisit? Because it's something that just, it's like a gift that keeps on giving. You know, those misheard lyrics when we could have sworn the lyrics said one thing, and when we found out what they actually said, we're like, no, that can't be. You mean I've been singing those lyrics wrong all these years? So we'll do that on the flip side at 11:30 this morning. Pardon me, just over 30 minutes from now. And during that, I promise I'm going to do two things. One is I'm going to play a bit of a song that nobody knows what the hell is being sung. Like, I promise you, nobody knows the words in that particular part of a very popular song from the 1980s. And I'm going to take you back to the 1960s and blow your mind with a Beatles song. You didn't know they were actually singing what I'll tell you they were singing. That's coming up on the flip side at 11:30 this morning. Right now, it's off to the 570 News Center for an update. And then, where's the best place to put your charitable dollars here in Canada? Well, one of those places could be right here in the region of Waterloo. We're going to talk about it coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570.
This is where today's topics turn into today's talking points. It's local and it's democratic radio at its finest. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio.
I'm the guy who every year has been cutting back on my donations because I'm on a fixed pension. I haven't heard from you, by the way, on how I get access to, you know, the amount that's spent on administration of various charities and so on, so I can make better decisions.
The Mike Farwell Show continues
on 570 News Radio.
That was Ted who called our show during the talkback hour on Monday. You'll get another talkback hour today from noon until 1, by the way. I'm sure you know that, but I'll just remind you anyway. And Ted, in fairness, has expressed in the past his concern with where his donated dollars go and whether or not he's making the best choices. And he had appealed to me to help him out in that regard. So we'll do the very best we can this morning as we're joined by Kate Bain, who's the managing director with Charity Intelligence. And Charity Intelligence has just released its list of top 100 charities. And on it is the Mennonite Central Committee, Ontario. You can see the Mennonite Central Committee's local office in Kitchener, right on Kent Avenue, including the wonderful Thrift on Kent store. Kate, thanks very much for making time for the show this morning. Good morning.
Great to be with you. Thank you, Mike.
How is it that a charity through Charity Intelligence ends up with a 5-star rating? What must it do?
What we're looking for is exactly what Ted and so many Canadians are asking. It's the number one question the Canadian has. How does this charity spend my money? And at Charity Intelligence, we dig through the audited financial statements, we understand accounting, and we present that information that we think every Canadian should have at their fingertips in sort of clear language so that you have clear line of sight, give to this charity, and this is how much is spent on salaries, and this is how much is spent on administration, and this is how much is spent on funding, and this is what goes to its programs. And these are the results its programs are creating. So we look at many different things when we do an analysis of a charity. But what Ted said, I just want to like shout out to Ted. He's exactly right. It should be really easy for somebody who has questions to get answers. These are legitimate questions. And unfortunately, sometimes when you go to charities' websites or you read all the fundraising mail you get, you really have no idea what your giving is doing and what is the good it's creating. So to all your listeners, we've got 5-star charities, we've got 4-star charities, we've got 3-star, 2-star, 1-star, and 0-star. Come over to Charity Intelligence's website and be informed about the charities you're supporting.
I've got to believe, Kate, that you do this work because it's so difficult for the average donor to do it themselves. If I'm reading between the lines of what you just described Charity Intelligence as doing, you're doing that heavy lifting for us.
Yeah, because I think it needs to be done. And our team at Charity Intelligence, this is what we do. And we are research analysts. And yes, if there's a Russian invasion of Ukraine, we'll be looking at all of the charities that are fundraising to help Ukraine. And we'll be following up and assessing who did what. Did they do what they said they were going to do? So, Canadians are very generous. And we believe that so much of our generosity could do far more good if we had the information and we knew which charities were really punching above their weight.
So how do you go about assessing the stars from 0 to 5? What makes a charity through your work at Charity Intelligence a 5-star charity, for example?
Okay, I love this question, so we're going to nerd out. We're looking at five independent metrics. So we're looking at financial transparency. Charities are public benefit organizations. They receive the most generous benefits from Ottawa. They get to operate tax-free. Yet, and most Canadians expect charities to have their books open. How does a charity spend my money is the number one question. And yet, when you go looking for the audited financial statements, sadly, in 2024, too few charities post this information on their website. And we're looking at the big charities, charities that really bring in more than $1 million a year in revenue. So we're following the money. So that's financial transparency. That's 20%. The next is accountability. If you took the time to read a charity's annual report, does it tell you how it spent the money and the results it achieved? What's its mission, strategy, activities? What were its outputs and its outcomes? It gets detailed, but we give letter grades. So you're looking for a charity that has a check mark plus for financial transparency, and you're looking for a B or an A grade when it comes to this is a charity that's telling you what it did. And then we look at the financial metrics. It's not just about overhead. It's not just about spending on admin and fundraising. That's important, but that's only 20% of the overall star rating. We're also looking at a charity's balance sheet. Not many, but it's not rare. There are some very large charities in Canada that have tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in cash and investments, and yet they are still fundraising. So you as a donor might want to know, is this a rich charity or is this a charity that's going to need my support to run their operations in the year ahead? So we're just looking at those objective metrics, and when we punch that all into the back end each year, it says these are the 100 top charities, and they get 5 stars. I would add 4 stars is very good still. 4 stars is a very good charity. 5 stars is a superstar.
Through the work that you've done, Kate, have you seen charities over the years improve their standing in your reports from 3 to 4 to 5 stars?
Absolutely. It's that nudge effect, right? It's a nudge effect in that we do a lot of coaching with charities and a lot of communications and management interviews to understand what's going on. And yes, some charities really are engaged. We've seen financial transparency improve since 2011. We've seen the level of accountability across the sector improve. I'd also tell you one thing. A charity said to us recently in 2020, just this September, we began collecting these numbers about our clients and the results our charity was having, only to get a higher grade at Charity Intelligence initially. But we are now using that information we're collecting to deliver better services and more innovative programs to the people we serve. That's what we're wanting. We want donors to be informed. We believe data matters. And we also see great potential for charities that start tracking their results and using that data to improve.
Kate, it's wonderful work that you're doing, and I'm so glad we could get you on the show today to help Ted and others out when they're considering where to put their donated dollars. Thank you for being here.
Great to be with you, Mike. Thanks so much.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Kate Bain is the Managing Director at Charity Intelligence. Goodness, I hope Ted is listening right now. I often say, whether you listen for 4 minutes or 4 hours, as long as you listen, I'm very appreciative of your ears, your eyes, if you're with us on Rogers TV, Cable 20 today, whatever the case may be. I'd love it if you listen from 9 until 1 every day. We cover a wide variety of issues. I hope we keep you entertained and informed as we go along. But to Ted's point, and a great opportunity for us to share this story and the work of Charity Intelligence, because a charity right here in the good old region of Waterloo, Mennonite Central Committee of Ontario, which has one of its outlets on Kent Avenue, not far from Charles and Sterling in downtown Kitchener, has received a 5-star rating from Charity Intelligence. A checkmark plus for financial transparency, an A in results reporting. 90% of the cents per dollar goes to the cause for every dollar donated after overhead costs of fundraising and admin management. 90 cents are available for programs. Charityintelligence.ca is the website you can visit to get this information. And to Ted's point when he called in the other day, I wonder what steps you go through, how you determine where your donated dollars go. Do you go through any sort of process at all? Have you, like Ted, had to curb your donations because things are getting expensive out there and you're having to make decisions with your discretionary spending, which this would be? Interested in how you're managing this in your household? Let me know. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
It should be really easy for somebody who has questions to get answers. These are legitimate questions. And unfortunately, sometimes when you go to charities' websites or you read all the fundraising mail you get, you really have no idea what your giving is doing and what is the good it's creating. Come over to Charity Intelligence's website and be informed about the charities you're supporting.
We got a call earlier this week from Ted. Not the first time he called to share with us his frustration that with this increased cost of living and him living on a fixed income, he has had to decrease the amount of money he donates on an annual basis. And he wondered where he could go to learn more about the charities that he's donating to or is thinking about donating to, how much overhead was associated with those particular charities, etc. And Ted has expressed this concern on a number of occasions, and it worked out so well that he called again this week on the same week that the Mennonite Central Committee of Ontario, which of course has its office right there on Kent Street in downtown Kitchener, was awarded a 5-star rating by Charity Intelligence, the highest rating that the organization Charity Intelligence gives out. So we could talk a little bit about MCC Ontario and its great work and how it achieved that 5-star rating, while also reminding you that charityintelligence.ca exists, and you can go there and you can look up any charity and you can find out how it's doing when it comes to financial transparency, results reporting, the demonstrated impact, the need for funding, how much it might have in reserves, and if your donation will help it keep the lights on, and how many cents from every dollar end up going to the cause. That information available to you at charityintelligence.ca. And it just makes me curious, like Ted, who has openly shared how he makes his donating decisions. What about you? Is there any sort of rhyme or reason to it, or just when the mailers come out towards the end of the year, it's holiday time, I'm just going to donate here, there, or anywhere else? Let's go to the phones. Talk to you about it. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. How are you this fine day?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. It's nice to hear your voice. How are you?
Oh, quite well.
Good.
Yeah, I did my research some years ago, and I found out the two top charities to support above all others in Canada are the Mennonite Central Committee. Congratulations for having them on. And the other is the Salvation Army. Virtually everything you give them goes to the people it's supposed to go to instead of some fat cat smoking cigars or sipping champagne in downtown Toronto. The other thing is, even the police, which surprised me, I found out about the Salvation Army from a hard-nosed, cynical cop, and he said they do good work, and I thought if he recommends them, they've got to be good. Those are the two tops I've ever been able to find, and I try and support them as I can.
Well, John, I appreciate that, and you've done clearly some of the legwork for us. I can't help but chuckle at the image of the fat cat CEO in downtown Toronto smoking a cigar. I do wonder about this, and we've talked about it before, but the CEO of a bank or a grocery chain, for example, gets paid handsomely of any company, right? They are very well compensated because their job, of course, is to drive growth in the company, profit in the company, satisfy those shareholders, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, and I get it, but we look at it differently when it comes to charity, right? Because we want those dollars to be getting into the programs that this charity is funding. That's what we want our donations to do, as opposed to helping out with that salary. However, why should an executive with a charity not be well compensated for those very same reasons that we compensate very well the CEO of a private company? If the CEO of the charity can drive growth, can generate more donations, doesn't that demonstrate their value to the charitable organization too? I get where you're coming from, but I think it's another way to look at how charities operate and what we expect of them, right? Just because you work for a charity doesn't mean you should work for free, does it? You can still be dedicated to the cause while drawing a salary, and hopefully you are demonstrating your value to that organization by what you are able to generate for it. Maybe the CEO that you pay $250,000 helps you raise eight times that, $2 million extra in fundraising every year. Does that make the $250,000 salary for the CEO worth it? I'm just throwing out random numbers, but something to consider nonetheless. Thanks, though, to John for pointing out that he found Mennonite Central Committee and Salvation Army to be the best bang for his charitable buck. And if you want to learn more about any other charity, just check out charityintelligence.ca. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. You know that one of the three pillars that this show stands on is transparency, right? Along with accountability and responsibility. So in the interests of full disclosure, full transparency, I confess that I Googled a list for our next topic, which is the flip side, our weekly conversation around some lighter things. And the reason I Googled a list, which gives me the most commonly, the top 40, in fact, misheard lyrics, is because if I were to do my own list of misheard lyrics, it would be every song. I always, every time get the words wrong, even to my most favorite songs. I mean, eventually, after I've listened to that song for the 1,678th time, I can usually figure it out. But almost inevitably, I am the guy who gets the lyrics wrong. Maybe for you, there's just a song that always confused and confounded. We're going to talk about that on the flip side this morning. And I promise I'm going to blow your mind with a Beatles song. I'm going to blow your mind. You haven't been hearing it right all these decades. What is the song lyric that you historically have misheard? That's coming up on the flip side right after this update from the 570 News Center. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. In case you needed any proof whatsoever as to my inability to understand lyrics, let me share with you that my all-time number one favorite rock and roll band, and in my very humble opinion, the greatest rock and roll band in the history of rock and roll music, that would be Rush and their big hit from their big album, Moving Pictures, Tom Sawyer. I always thought the opening lyric, like I got it wrong from the get-go. I thought the opening lyric was a Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride. And of course, it's a modern day warrior. But from the time I first heard the song back in 1982 until I looked at the lyrics on the interwebs, I thought it was a Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. And so, as I said before that update with Hutch, I will inevitably be the guy who gets the lyrics wrong. So all I did was Google a list of the top 40 most misheard lyrics to have a little bit of fun and get the ball rolling for our conversation on the flip side today, which is the song lyrics that you most commonly, or perhaps most embarrassingly, misheard. 519-570-2545, star 570, and 1-800-570-5715. Colin Wobbles Robertson is our guy on the other side of the glass today. Wobbles, can we just agree that nobody has any idea what John Cougar Mellencamp is singing here?
Jackie gonna be a football star. Diane's debutante backseat. Oh, Jackie's car.
What? What did he just say? Oh, but wait, there's more. We'll suck on a chili dog, and then we'll be all messed up and confused again.
Sucking on chili dog, outside taste freeze.
Diane's sitting on Jackie's lap, got his hands between her knees.
So far, so good.
Jackie say, hey, Diane, let's run off behind the shade of trees.
And what?
Dribble off those Bobby Brooks, let me do what I please.
What? Nobody knows. Nobody knows, Colin, what the hell that's all about.
Did he say, do what I please at the end there?
I think he was. And something about Bobby Brooks, which is a brand of jeans. I had to look this up, too. But nobody, and who sucks on chili dogs?
Nobody. Nobody does.
Nobody does. No. Right.
It's illegal, actually.
In most states, it is. So there you go. Nobody ever understood that. It doesn't make it any less of a song. Let me share this one with you. And I promise you that you will never listen to this classic from the Beatles again, because you think they were saying one thing, but what they're actually singing is knee deep in donuts.
See how they run.
Here comes.
Knee deep in donuts.
Huh? Knee deep in donuts.
Knee deep in donuts.
That's right.
Maybe at your breath.
You thought it was Lady Madonna, but it is, in fact, Knee Deep in Donuts.
Lady Madonna.
Tell me I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong.
Thank you.
I can't wait to be Knee Deep in Donuts.
Right?
It sounds delicious.
Who would not want to be Knee Deep in Donuts?
That's why the Beatles were so big, was because of that line.
That line right there. Is there a song that you always messed up the lyrics to? That is the question we are asking you on the flip side today. And just as I was hoping to get the answer from Colin, your phone calls have started coming in, which is great. From the list of the top 40 most misheard lyrics, how about the Eurythmics and Sweet Dreams Are Made of Cheese? I'm not sure I'm really hearing cheese in there. And I usually mishear the lyrics. I'm also not sure I hear that we built this city on sausage rolls.
Don't you remember? We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
I mean, I think you gotta work pretty hard to hear sausage rolls.
You gotta work really hard
with that one.
To hear sausage rolls. You gotta want sausage rolls to hear sausage rolls with that one.
I just want donuts still.
I know, thanks for donuts.
Knee deep in donuts. what lyrics did you always mishear, Colin?
The one that gets me, and I think it's forced now, is NSYNC's It's Gonna Be Me.
Yes.
It's gonna be me. Because now it's been so brainwashed into me, it's the only thing I hear when listening to that song.
It's funny you say that, because Christine Clark, our morning news anchor on All News Mornings, brought that up with me this morning when we were talking about what was coming up on the show. And I was this many years old when I finally, like, I had to, because everybody at the beginning of May puts this Justin Timberlake meme out there. I'm like, what the hell? I finally Googled it to figure it out. So there you go.
Now you know.
Now I know, thanks to the internet. All right, let's get to the phones. I want to hear from you on the lyrics you most commonly miss here. George, good morning.
Hey, Mike, I'm impressed. You would have only been 11, 12 years old when you love that song, Tom Sawyer.
Monday Warrior, buddy.
Okay, here's mine. I don't know if it's on the list or not, but here's mine. I always thought Jimi Hendrix was saying in Purple Haze, excuse me, while I kiss this guy.
Hey, George, there's nothing wrong with that. You go right ahead and kiss whoever you want to kiss, pal.
For years and years, that's what I thought, until someone finally told me that's not the case.
Oh, you mean he's kissing the sky?
Sky, that's...
George, thank you for that. Appreciate it. You know what that reminds me of? And this is a true story as the day is long. In fact, Dave Schneider would have been working for this radio station. Well, I think by that time they had graduated to Chime 96.7. I can't remember, because Schneider used to... I shouldn't call him that. That's my nickname for him because I see him a lot at hockey games. The friendly neighborhood Schneider man, as he was known on the air. Worked at 570 AM when it was a music station. I remember the day he was playing. Was he playing the Beach Boys? Or did I just call him with the question? Because Dave used to do an oldies show. Anyway, I called in and I wanted to know about Surfing USA. Is it, and to George's point, excuse me while I kiss the sky, not this guy. Were the lyrics for Surfing USA, if everybody had an ocean across the USA? Because you can't surf without an ocean. Or is it if everybody had a notion, as in they had the idea? Because You're not just going to go surfing unless you have the idea to go surfing. I asked Dave Schneider that question. I called him when he was the music DJ, don't you know? And I said, Dave, Mr. Friendly Neighborhood Schneider Man, can you answer the question for me? We had a good laugh about it. He was very patient with me as a young man calling the radio DJ. Zoltan, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing words. A lot of words today, Zoltan, as usual.
See, there's a group that probably no one has heard anymore. It's called CCR.
Oh, wait,
Fogerty Sang.
Hang on. Wait. Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
Everybody knows Creedence Clearwater Revival. Come on now.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So,
yes.
John Fogerty sings, and then everybody thinks, and I'm not going to tell you what the words are, everybody thinks it's a bathroom on the right, where it's actually the bad moon is on the rise.
That is correct, sir. It's the bad moon on the rise, not the bathroom on the right.
Thanks for listening, pal.
Thanks for calling, Zoltan. I always like to hear from you. The bathroom on the right. Or is it the knee-deep in donuts?
Knee-deep in donuts.
I'm going to drill that into your brain before the end of the day. Sean, you're on the flip side. Good morning.
Good morning. Remember the Scorpions' Wind of Change song?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah. For me, all I could hear was, I had to look up the lyrics. It's actually the Follow the Moskva down to Gorky Park. I always heard, Follow me, you dumb squat, down to Donkey Park.
Okay, wait a minute. Back this up. You thought it was Follow me, you dumb squat
down to Donkey. Well, you know, they got really heavy German accents, right?
Okay, down to Donkey Park, which I think is better than Gorky Park. But the actual lyrics were?
Yeah, I followed the Moskva down to Gorky Park. Try singing that in a heavy German accent.
Sean, I love it. You added the accent to it as well, which I think is fantastic. It's a lot of fun when you mishear the lyrics. Which lyrics did you always mishear? That's our flip side question for you this morning. Give us a call and let us know. It's the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Blaine sends an email to Mike at 570news.com. Says, I know exactly what song by the Beatles you're going to talk about. I've played this game with people for years. Really, Blaine? So you're convinced that Lady Madonna actually is knee-deep in donuts?
Lady Madonna.
I mean, come on, it's awfully close. No, Blaine points out that nobody knows the words to Penny Lane. I will be honest with you. Again, it's the only way I know how to be. Transparency on this show. I'm not a huge Beatles guy. I'm sorry. The White Album was utterly fantastic. I will not deny. However, I'm just never a big Beatles guy. So I looked up the lyrics to Penny Lane. What on earth were John, Paul, George, and Ringo on when they wrote this one? In Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs. On the corner is a banker with a motor car. Penny Lane, there is a fireman with an hourglass. Behind the shelter, in the middle of a roundabout, Penny Lane, the barber shaves another customer. What in H-E double hockey sticks is that all about? We're playing the game of the lyrics you always misheard here on the flip side this morning. Let's go back to the phones. Brian, good afternoon, or good morning.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
Good, Brian. How are you?
Good. Just on a side note, I never thought of the lyrics as Penny Lane as too arbitrary, just describing a place where they grew up. Penny Lane was an actual street with businesses.
But listen, a fireman with an hourglass in his pocket is a portrait of the Queen?
Apparently, you're not a Beatles guy, but there was a big documentary that was done years ago called Beatles Anthology, and Paul talks very specifically about the lyrics of that song, and they were just literally things that they observed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Penny Lane's a strange place, then.
Well, I think that was the point, that it was kind of a strange place, but it was the place they both knew very well. So,
did they know it in real life, though, or in a hallucinogenic life?
No, it's actually a place in Liverpool.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm going to stop ripping on the Beatles.
Like the first lyric about the barber, you know, he's talking about, you know, when you go into a barber shop and they had like a bunch of pictures and you could pick the picture of, you know, the haircut that you wanted.
Sure.
right? Well, that's what he's talking about. He, you know, the barber has pictures of every head he's known.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it says. Every head he's had the pleasure to know. I got you. I was reading about the pretty nurse selling poppies from a tray then, too. It's cool. I got to go to Penny Lane sometime. Sounds like an interesting place.
Yeah, supposedly part of Liverpool, so it's a big tourist attraction because of that song.
All right.
Anyways, my misheard song lyric was not one that I misheard, but because it became sort of famous in culture, now I can't hear that song the same way. So Elton John singing Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer.
You mean Tony Danza.
All I can hear is Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza now.
Who doesn't want to be held closer by Tony Danza? Come on.
And but it's kind of annoying because it's like, you know, if I'm driving in the car and that song comes along, I'm going to sing Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza out loud. Like, I can't not now.
Of course, right. And that's the whole point of this segment, Brian, to get knee deep in donuts and Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza into your brain for the rest of the day.
There you go. Go at some point, Mike, maybe when it's in your retirement years or whatever. You can even come over to my place and borrow all my LPs, but go into the Beatles wormhole. You will never be the same again. It's an incredible catalog of music.
All right. I appreciate it, Brian. I really do. And I do appreciate the Beatles for their place in music history. I just always found it a little simple for my taste. I know. I didn't bring up this segment today to whiz on the Beatles. I really didn't. I guess I never understood. Maybe I should have done more LSD when I was a kid. Curtis, good morning.
How are you?
I'm all right. And you?
I'm not too bad. Good pre-afternoon, Mike.
Good pre-afternoon, Curtis. Thank you.
yeah, okay. So this is not a song per se. Hits a little close to home. I listen to Brady and Tara every morning, okay? Trying to win that sound of the...
Excellent choice, by the way, listening to Brady and Tara, for sure.
Oh, yeah, they're so good. I love listening to them. But every time they play that little... I don't know what you guys call it.
The like secret the sound. It's the secret sound.
No, not the secret sound, but the... when they, you know, they're coming back into their show or going out of it, whatever, like, staying to a commercial.
Gotcha.
It always says... Brady and Tara in the morning or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It always sounds to me like it's saying Plenty of Tara.
Plenty of Tara?
Yeah, Plenty of Tara in the morning or whatever.
You can never get enough Tara. There's no such thing as Plenty of Tara. You always need more Tara.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's why I have to stop and listen closer, because, I mean, that's the truth, right? But it doesn't leave my mind. Every time I'm kind of singing along in my mind, it, like... I think I'm hearing Plenty of Tara. Like, it's funny. I want to relay that to them. I just have never had a chance or got them on the phone or nothing. So.
Well, believe you me, when their show's done, their ears are glued to this show, Curtis. So they'll know now.
Good. Nice. Great show, by the way.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. Great to hear from you. You know, the real reason you're hearing that is because Brady is just such an odd name. He's an odd dude, and he was birthed with an odd name. Who names their kid Brady? That should be a last name. Brady. If his name was Brady, look out. No, I love Brady and Tara. And truly, there is no such thing as Plenty of Tara. You cannot get enough. And Brady and Tara put on a terrific morning show. Ron, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning to you. Well, so I have a song for you that you probably don't have on your list.
Okay.
Do you remember a song called Come Out and Play by The Offspring?
I know the title. I wouldn't know the song, but I've heard of it. I'm not a huge Offspring guy, but yes.
Okay. Well, there's one line where they say, "Where I swear to you, it sounds like they're saying the F word." And I'm like going, what the? Because I was thinking to myself, hang on, this is AM radio, it's FM radio. They wouldn't be able to get away with that.
Right.
So I looked at the lyrics. It's spelled F-U-N-K, out.
Oh, so isn't that Wild Cherry? If you don't like what you see here, get the funk out.
Yes.
Yes, but different. Offspring. Are you sure, though, the Offspring just didn't put that in the lyrics, even though, like, in the album cover or the album jacket because they didn't want to get in trouble? I bet you the Offspring say the F word.
It sounds so close to the F word, but
yeah.
Radio stations let it go. So I was like going, okay.
Okay. That might be the radio edit you're hearing, Ron. We changed that around. Remember, I have it on my playlist on Spotify. Oh, Steve Miller and the funky stuff going down in the city, but they change it to Funky Kicks. Jet Airliner. Funky Kicks going down in this.
Yeah.
Anyway, but and even on Spotify, they give me the radio edit. I want to hear the funky going down in the city, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you on that one. But if I would add that one to the list.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate that. Come out and play The Offspring. As I'm looking at the list, I Googled because it's the only way I could get a top 40, because otherwise it would be the top 1 million. I love music. I always get the lyrics wrong. Money for Nothing and Chips for Free from Dire Straits. I think most of us know it's Chicks, right? Even though we don't say that anymore. The radio edit should be Chips. Paul Young's Every Time You Go Away, You Take a Piece of Meat with You, as opposed to a piece of me with you. How about So Lonely from The Police? It's not Sue Lawley, it's So Lonely. And then Bohemian Rhapsody, Saving His Life from This Warm Sausage Tea. No, it's Spare Him His Life from This Monstrosity. Thank you very much. Grant, which lyric do you miss here most often?
It's by Hall & Oates, and for the longest time, I always thought they meant Bitch Girl. But if you look up the lyric, he's saying Rich Girl.
Well, Grant, I don't know how you got that lyric wrong when it's actually the title of the song.
Well, because
the song is called Rich Girl.
I know, but...
Well, but if the song's called Rich Girl, how could you possibly hear anything else?
Because if you listen to it very closely, it actually sounds like that. And if that guy doesn't want to sing about hugging a guy, then sing about hugging Taylor Swift.
I have no idea. It's kissing, and it's a misheard lyric. I love Grant. It's the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Don't worry, we can carry over your misheard lyrics into the next hour if you'd like. And Carol, Mary, Lisa, your reminder, I know you wanted to talk earlier about involuntary treatment. We didn't have time. We have the next hour dedicated to your phone calls on the 12 o'clock talkback. Thanks to our friends at Rogers TV for producing the TV side of this show, 10 till noon every day. An update from the 570 News Center, and we continue. Your 12 o'clock talkback hour is next on the Mike Farwell Show.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Jaggedy yak.
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust fly with that broom.
Well, this hour every day on the show is open to your phone calls, your thoughts, your ideas. You get to start the conversation. And it's kind of like tying up some loose ends on the show. Earlier, one of the segments that we featured on the show was about involuntary treatment, which the Ontario Big City Mayor's Caucus at its meeting last week was pushing the province via a motion for some legislative change that would allow for involuntary treatment for mental health and addictions issues. The motion tabled did not pass as it was tabled. It was softened somewhat, but it certainly sparked a conversation, and we had to leave several people hanging on the phones because we didn't have time to get to everybody earlier. So if Lisa or Carol or Mary would like to still talk about that, we'll put you right at the top of the lineup here on our 12 o'clock talkback hour, which is underway at 519-570-2545, star 570, and 1-800-570-5715. Kyle, start us off. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, it's my old man's birthday today, and I know he listens every once in a while to the show, but he doesn't like calling, or he never calls in because that's not just who he is. But I know he's probably going to be listening right now, so I just want to say to my pops, happiest birthday. I love ya. Thanks for everything, and see you tonight. And then I know he's enjoying his retirement, so that's all I got to say. Mike, thanks a lot, man.
All right, Kyle, appreciate that. Nice message through us to Kyle's dad. And that reminds me, our good friend Paul, who frequently calls the show but has been quiet lately. That's because he's away, way, 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 way up in northwestern Ontario. He sent some photos. You can see them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheMikeFarwellShow. Looks pretty nice where he is. And Paul sent an email saying, I won't have cell service to call into the show. However, would you please wish my grandson, Alex, a happy 17th birthday? Maybe one of your 47 listeners will know him and share it with him. So Alex and Paul have been estranged for quite some time, but annually on this day, Paul makes a point of sending out those birthday wishes. So if you know where Alex is, make sure that Alex knows that his granddad is thinking of him on his 17th birthday today. Continuing the talk back hour, Ted, good afternoon.
Hey, Mike, I was fortunately listening this morning.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
And I just wanted to thank you so much for that segment on the charities. I wanted to take a little time, and I did a little scrolling through there, and it has great information, and it's going to be so helpful to me and other people, I hope, as well. I already was surprised about some ratings, and I won't go into that anyway, but again, I wanted to thank you, and I was able to scroll through that while I enjoyed your segment on the flip side at the same time.
Good stuff.
It's been a great morning. Thank you so much for doing that, Mike.
You are welcome, Ted. Thank you very much for the call. I'm so glad you were able to hear that. Ted had called earlier this week, and not for the first time, and he said, listen, my disposable income is decreasing year over year because I'm on a fixed income, and it's getting expensive out there. And so one of the things that suffers is the amount I donate to charity. I want to make sure that what I am donating goes to a place where it's best used and most needed. Could you help me out? And then wouldn't you know, like a happy coincidence, the Mennonite Central Committee of Ontario, which has its offices on Kent Street in downtown Kitchener, was awarded 5 stars by way of rating from Charity Intelligence, which is an organization that does exactly the kinds of things that Ted was talking about, like where does my money go when it's donated? And so we thought we can talk about Mennonite Central Committee and its successful 5-star rating while also letting Ted and you know that there is this agency that exists that kind of does the research and legwork for you. And if you want to know where your donated dollars are going, you can visit charityintelligence.ca and see how many stars your favorite charity or your preferred charity gets. charityintelligence.ca. Some good information there for you. Back to the phones on the Talk Back Hour. Grant, good afternoon. Oh my goodness gracious, Grant.
I like the way that you come out very sneaky like.
Sneaky?
Very, very quiet. Very, yeah.
When do I come out quiet and sneaky? I'm loud. I'm in your ears every day.
When you mention my name, it's like you're sneaking around the corner.
No, it's like I'm nervous. It's Grant. Okay, buddy, what's on your mind?
Three things.
Three things. Whew, getting your money's worth.
Isn't that kind of cool? I think it was in this area where this farmer had ugly potatoes. It was on the Rob Snow show. And
how do you know a potato is ugly?
Who determined?
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I love me a potato, especially French fried.
But this farmer had a lot of leftover produce, and I guess there were thousands of people that were.
Yes, I heard that yesterday on Rob's show. Yeah, and he had so much to give away, and the demand, people were waiting like 90 minutes to get their ugly potatoes.
And Mr. Cameron Reed.
Mr. Cameron Reed joining the prospects game, defenseman for the Kitchener Rangers, and making the NHL Central Scouting Prospects to Watch list.
And a 5-star place that I
would recommend people to go to for their income tax is Simpson Financial, because they go way and beyond their expectation.
Grant, are you doing a commercial for them now? Are they paying you for this endorsement?
No, I like them because they go beyond their expectations. I have anxiety, and they've last several years they have come by my place to pick up my payment, whereas they probably could say, no, we're not going to do that.
That's true. It's going above and beyond some excellent customer service. You love to hear it. Those were Grant's three things. You can have one or three. Whatever's on your mind, you can start the conversation, your idea, your complaint, your rave on a nice sunny afternoon. It's up to you. The 12 o'clock talkback hour belongs to you on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. The opinions are nonstop on the 12 o'clock talkback hour, and I can only get to them as fast as I can answer the phone. So let's get right back to those phones. Susan is with us. Good afternoon, Susan.
Hi, Mike. It's Susan from Sarnia.
Susan from Sarnia. I wouldn't brag about that handle if I were you.
Well, I didn't say Brantford. I said Sarnia.
Wow, nice. Good shot over to the telephone city. I love it.
Okay.
Hello, Susan from Sarnia.
I don't know if you've addressed this on your show, but do you think the province should put a cap on elderly drivers, the age?
No, but I do think that there should be mandatory retraining or retesting every 5 years from the time you get your license, not just when you turn 80.
5 years?
Every 5 years.
No. There's been some incidents lately on the news. The man from Miramosa was 95, and he killed the woman in the parking lot and put her husband in the hospital. I mean, we hear this all the time, or collisions, especially out on country roads, where the driver's 88 or 92. And I just don't think that your reaction time is as good as it was when you were younger. That's sort of my rant, but I don't know. I think it should be looked into, and maybe 5 years is too long.
Susan,
I don't want to restrict anybody's freedom, but, you know.
I appreciate the call, and I get where you're coming from, and you're absolutely right. I mean, our abilities, reactions, reflexes, et cetera, all slow down. And it may be, is it not annual after you turn 80? It might not be. I would certainly be supportive of that. But to Susan's last point, you don't want to restrict somebody's freedoms, and I know seniors who have had to surrender their licenses for various reasons, and that's a real tough nut. So I don't want to arbitrarily set an age and say, after this point, you can no longer drive. I think testing is very important. Hopefully the testing is robust enough to catch somebody that might be a risk. So if it's not annual after 80, I would be supportive of that. But I got my driver's license when I was 16 years old. So that was 1987. I have never one time been retrained or retested since. You think the roads have changed in the last 37 years, out of curiosity? Like, come on with your coming on here. I think there should be more training and retesting. I really do. Every 5 years, make it mandatory. Curtis, you're on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, not pre-afternoon now.
No, now it is afternoon, literally.
Afternoon, yeah. So I agree with what you were just talking about with the driving, especially new drivers. I think they absolutely need to be re-looked at even well before 5 years, because not a lot progressed into a safe driver. Besides that, though, the mandatory addiction services are being made to take addiction services. I'm just wondering if one thing have they thought of is that if, you know, if that was to go through, next thing you know, you're really going to feel bad because, of course, they're going to start forcing people to go in if they're allowed to. And then what do you have for the people that, have, you know, want to do it on their own voluntarily? That would be another, I think, another, hurdle you know, as far as all that goes. There's just not enough beds, like you say, for the volunteering people, let alone who's going to be forced. And you know those numbers will be high if they're forced to go.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. So that's how I feel about it. I mean, I went through addictions myself, and, you know, I volunteered, obviously. I was not forced, but from what they tell you when you get in there to begin with, is it's a very low percentage that are successful the first time around, second time. People go through it 10 times because they really want to be clean and they want to get off it and, you know, live their life. But it's a very hard struggle to begin with. So to do it mandatorily, they just typically learn how to go through it so they don't get the jail sentence. I think it'd be a lower percentage of people that would be successful when they're forced to do it rather than voluntarily.
I think you make an excellent point, Curtis, and I appreciate you sharing that. When we spoke with Waterloo Mayor Dorothy McCabe about it earlier today, she got me thinking about that idea. Insofar as we don't have enough beds as it is, so what about people who voluntarily want treatment? What can we do for them? And as Curtis points out, of course, we'll be overwhelmed with the number of people in treatment then if we make it mandatory. So what if we just started by creating enough space for those who voluntarily want to seek treatment? And then let's see what the landscape looks like once we provide those beds for people who are asking for them today. Kian sent a really good thread or some thoughts, an extended tweet. You can check out via my Twitter or X feed at Farwell_WR. And Kian points out, on an emotional level, he wants mandatory treatment to work. But when you start getting into it, maybe it doesn't. We'll take a break, come back with more on the Mike Farwell Show. It's your 12 o'clock talkback hour, 570 News Radio. Our last call from Curtis got us back into the involuntary treatment conversation. We left some callers on the line earlier today when we talked about that. I promised them if they call back, they get to the top of the line. And Lisa is here, also called earlier. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, you brought it around again. I thought, oh, I'm going to call because I'm still driving around. So this mandatory drug treatment idea, it made me think of a question that I did not know the answer to. Do you know what percentage of people who may be seeking drug treatment cannot access it?
No, I don't know the percentage. I'm certain there are some, just anecdotally from families that we've met on this show, be it for drugs or mental health, that have not been able to get the treatment they need. But I don't know the percentage.
Yeah, so that's my first kind of wonder there. You know, there obviously, unfortunately, with an addiction and also if you add into it a mental health aspect, those people may not think they have an issue, and then in that case I have to wonder if it would be beneficial of that towards them to treat them like a child who is doing something that they don't understand is risky or harmful to themselves, and then they might benefit from being in a situation where they are in a mandatory program.
I think that is exactly the thinking, Lisa.
Yeah. So it's going to be it's almost a case-by-case basis. But it gets tricky to be able to make that call, and I don't envy any of the people that have to deal with that, and I feel very fortunate that I do not have a situation in my family that we're trying to struggle with that, and I wish anyone that is, good luck.
Yeah, Lisa, I appreciate that, and I often reflect that same way, having not had to deal with it, nor having had to deal with it with anybody in my family. Absolutely. It's almost a gift when you consider the magnitude of the problem today. And the idea being, we must help those who cannot help themselves. If they are a danger to themselves or to others, these are the challenges that we're facing. And even if we wanted to do it that way, helping those who cannot help themselves, do we have a place to help them? I'm not sure we do. An update from the 570 News Center and more of your calls on the Talkback Hour. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. It is the hour we reserve for you every day to share your opinion. And we tie up some loose ends, too, because sometimes we get so deeply into an issue, we don't have time for everything in the moment. That was the case this morning when we talked about involuntary treatment or mandatory forced treatment for people suffering from mental health or addictions issues on our streets. We talked about it at 10 this morning, left many people hanging on the line. One of them, Mary, who is with us again this afternoon on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon, Mary.
Oh, good afternoon, Mike. Yes, I hope my mind is going to be clear. I got a lot, so much going on in there, like busy day for busy people, you know?
I know exactly what you mean. Yes.
You know how it goes, and I'm retired. Anyway, I'll just hop in a little bit on the driving thing. Once you're 80, every 2 years you have to go, and you just take a cognitive test and this and that, you don't go on the road. Okay?
Okay.
So I don't know if you would want that. The other thing is, quickly, I watched a couple times on this issue at W5. There are places in Toronto, Mississauga, that area, that are giving people licenses without ever getting in the car.
Yeah, I've heard. I think there's a big, big problem in the system,
yeah,
for sure.
So
yeah.
Anyway, but my main issue was the mandatory treatment thing. Nobody gives us any numbers. How many are already being turned away? I don't think our government gives enough money. And where, how are they possibly going to come up with all these beds and the people to run the place? Nurses are in short supply. Now, my present husband, his son had a learning disability, which pushed him into a mental problem. He was good for 20 years on the proper medication. He turned himself in, moved up to Port Elgin, turned himself in. He knew his body well enough that it wasn't right, and went into the Owen Sound Hospital. I'm not right. I want to be admitted. There is no bed for you. He died. He died. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, we don't have enough beds. There's no question.
For you, and yep. You're turning yourself in, Mike. This is not okay.
You're right.
And I have two daughter-in-laws, actually, maybe three even, that are crisis clinic nurses. It takes a certain type of person to deal with this kind of situation. I don't know where Ford thinks he's getting the people from. I think if they had enough things out there for people that have actually voluntarily want help, they can't wait 6-8 months. Come on, Mike.
No, Mary, you're right. And I got to run because the phone lines are so busy. But you're hitting on something that is important to this conversation. And that is, are there enough beds now? And if we create more beds, do we have the staff for them? These are really important questions. Steve, you're on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, so my problem is nowhere near as big as some of the problems you're tackling today, but it's a pet peeve of mine, and it kind of goes in with the infrastructure here in the city and how bad it's getting. Can someone explain to me why the GRT insists on having bus stops like 5 meters inside of every major intersection? Like, it is absolutely ridiculous now that you get to an intersection and you get boxed out because you can't go. The bus has stopped. And with the amount of people using our transit all of a sudden in the last couple of years, you know, these buses are sitting there for 30, 40 seconds and you're stuck in the middle of the intersection because you can't go around them, and you're lane changing. You're forcing people to change lanes at intersections. There's got to be a better way of just moving them back from these big intersections, or even just have a warning light so that cars coming up behind the bus know that that bus is going to stop on the other side of that intersection, right? Like, it's crazy to me. I've been driving around all morning, I can't tell you the amount of times I've been sitting in an intersection and I can't leave because I'm stuck behind a bus, traffic's piling up on the left lane, and I can't go around, and I end up getting stuck in the intersection. It's driving me nuts. There's got to be a better way.
Steve, I appreciate the call. I can appreciate the frustration for sure. I always try to remember what I learned in Young Drivers of Canada way back in 1987. Plan ahead. So if you're looking well enough ahead on the road and you see that there's a bus up ahead, expect it to be stopping in the not too distant future and maybe make your lane change accordingly. But I get you, and I'm not sure there is a fix for it unless we are adding dedicated bus lanes, which we do not have on every regional road for sure. Mike, you're on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. It sounds like we're heading towards a provincial election. Doug's getting his goodie basket ready to bribe us again.
It does sound that way.
I've been thinking about that I would love each of the parties to cost out. May not make any sense, but we keep seeing stories about how much people are paying for parking at hospitals. And especially if they have someone who's in for a significant time, those bills really add up. So what I would love to see somebody cost out is how much revenue we could make from charging parking at all the casinos in this province, and in turn, use that to fund the money lost from parking at hospitals. I don't know if it makes sense. I don't know if that's even remotely a financial match. But if it is, it would seem to make more sense to me that we collect our cash from the people going into the casinos than we collect the cash for people going into the hospitals. Just a thought. Don't know if it works.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the thought. That is a very interesting, out-of-the-box kind of idea that I confess to not having heard before. Remember, when it comes to what you pay for parking at a hospital, that revenue is to support the hospital. Because what we forget sometimes is that even though hospitals, healthcare is provincially funded, that is simply for the operation of said hospital, the people working within it, etc. All of the equipment and all of those other things are funded through the community where the healthcare facility, the hospital, exists. Those fundraising capital campaigns we hear about, those parking revenues, etc. That's what's supporting what goes on inside the hospital. The province funds the staffing, etc., the building. We fund what goes inside of it as a community. That said, interesting idea. Or maybe you could just add the parking to the casinos and use that revenue to support healthcare. This is going to be something really interesting. I'll just throw in there. When it comes to our new consolidated sort of mega super hospital that's being built out by the University of Waterloo, what kind of a capital campaign are we going to be undertaking? And I know the Care Never Stops campaign is currently underway, but how much are we going to have to raise as a community to put all of the things into that new super hospital in Waterloo? It's going to be a very big number. Anyway, really interesting idea, Mike. Haven't heard it before. You got me thinking. You opened my ears. Not a bad idea. This is the 12 o'clock Talkback Hour on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. It is a busy time on the Talkback Hour, as always seems to be the case. We love to hear from you. We love that you take advantage of this opportunity every day to share an opinion, a complaint, an idea, as Mike did a moment ago. Why don't we charge people for parking at casinos instead of charging for people for parking at hospitals? Let's get back to the phones. Rudy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike. Now, the online gambling, you know, people on their phones, the apps, all the apps for gambling and that, from what I understand, Doug Ford let it into Ontario because they're getting 20% tax on every bet on those apps. That's got to be a lot of money. They could use it. I'm wondering, where does that money go? That's a lot of money. That could be used for health care and certain things like that, but nobody's ever said where it's gone.
Yeah, you know what? It's a great question, Rudy. And really, it's the multi-billion, with a B, dollar question that we've always been asking. I am certain that it is not as simple as it seems from the outside looking in. But I'm with you, Rudy, with that general sentiment. I have joked on many an occasion that if you just sit outside any LCBO anywhere on any given Saturday and watched the amount of traffic going in and out of that store, you would wonder why we ever need to collect any other tax revenue, right? Because of all of the taxes that are collected on those sales of alcohol. Surely, with the number of people that go in and out of those stores, that's plenty of tax revenue, right? But obviously it's not. It's not that simple. But you're absolutely right about the revenues on gambling, which is the new gambling, if you will, in addition to the long-standing lotteries, which were started to help fund things like healthcare in this province. We've been doing lotteries for decades. Do you remember Penelope and Mr. Whoever he was in the store? You can't win if you don't play. The old Lotterio commercials and Faye Dance with Winterio on TV. We've collected a lot over the years. We continue to collect a lot. I would love to know. Like I said, in my heart of hearts, when I'm having a better day, I understand that it's probably not quite as simple as it looks from here. But boy, oh boy, do you have to wonder. Joe, you're on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Mike. Just want to confirm, is there a game Friday and Sunday?
Joe, it's hockey season. Does a bear poop in the woods? Of course there's a game on Friday.
Every Friday.
Every Friday. Away. Well, sometimes we're away. That's true. Yes, there's a game at the Memorial Auditorium this Friday.
Damn, I got to give my hockey tickets away. I'm up north. Anyway, so, Mike, the rats are jumping off the sinking ship.
What do you mean?
The liberals. They're eating their young.
No. The Prime Minister said there's party unity. Don't worry about it, Joe.
Yeah, do you buy that?
Do you know what I honestly buy? I said this to my beloved last night. I have never been sicker of a story than I am of this story about the alleged mutiny inside the party. We've been talking about this for how many days, and it amounted to what? Well, here's a letter. It might be strongly worded. I mean, I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the phone business clown did it again.
Sorry, your phone broke up. Which clown did it again? All right, Joe, you are so far up north, your phone sucks. Just remember that every Friday is a hockey Friday during the hockey season. Joe's right. We're not always in Kitchener, but even if we're not, there's going to be a game somewhere, I promise you. And by the way, if you've got tickets to the game, how the hell do you have to ask me if there's a game? You got tickets to the game. You know there's a game. Come on with you. Coming on. Your 12 o'clock Talkback Hour continues. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. About 4 minutes away from 1 o'clock, your update in the 570 News Center. And then Now You Know with Rob Snow taking you through until 3 this afternoon. We continue our Talkback Hour. Back to the phones with Dave. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I agree 100% regarding the liberal mutiny. I mean, what a joke this is. They're writing a letter. I mean, just like the city of Kitchener wrote a letter about the drug issue and, you know, the drug sites, like, or Karen Redmond writing a letter. It doesn't matter. Like, show some action, for Christ's sake. You know what I'm saying?
I get you. All right, well, Dave made his point, and Dave got gone. It's just been a big nothing burger to me. Right. When the reports started surfacing last weekend, it was all about the Prime Minister's days are numbered. And well, here we are. And I understand the Prime Minister, of course, would be the one to say, well, everything's fine here. There's nothing to see here. We're united as a party, et cetera. But this, I don't know. There's just a whole lot of smoke and absolutely zero fire. I don't really understand what the exercise was, but here we are. Maybe the exercise was just to get us talking about the Federal Liberal Party. Beats me. Andre, you're on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mike. two things. One, I don't understand that on a road, I'm amazed I'm saying this, but all the signs says 60 maximum, or 50 maximum, or 70 maximum. And now you got all these people who are driving under because they come from somewhere else that they don't understand how it works. But I don't understand, is it true by your eyes that the sign all say maximum? Because I know when I grew up, it said 60, I go 65, 70, or if it says...
No, the sign has always said maximum. But what do you, I don't understand what you mean by people.
Well, because now that I'm driving with people, because I'm blind and I'm seeing the changes, like you said, I don't remember, like I remember on a road, it used to say, you know, minimum this, but never maximum, because that's the speed limit. But if you drove under the speed limit, let's say so the highway's 100, but I'm going 90, you would get a ticket because you're causing traffic. You're causing, right?
I think you can still get a ticket for driving too slow, but I think it's pretty rare. And I don't remember the minimum signs.
Okay. So yesterday when we were driving, we counted, because it was a long trip, we counted 80 cars that were driving under the speed limit.
Come on, how did you know that? Did you have a radar gun on?
No. We were just testing by driving double lane just to see what's going on because, okay, my wife was road. She was talking back.
I don't know how you counted 80 cars, Andre. 80.
That's nothing. Well, we came back from Twin Valley Zoo, right, in Brantford.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is, my second thing is last year, Paul Fixer did mention that his little shushu was Cameron Reed. And I was like, okay, right? And me, it's Tanner Lamb. And you know what? I said it last time when I called you Friday. They are doing amazing. They are growing. Even with all our top guns last year that are gone, this year, it's given them a chance to show, right? Like Carson Wakeoff gun. We even said it together. We're going to see what our young fellows are. And I'm just so proud to for our Kitchener Rangers. Thank you for UC. Thank you for everything. And yeah, I hope I'm going to be there, Mike. Have a great day.
Thanks, Andre. I hope you're going to be there too. I hope you get to take in as much of the experience at the game you can take in with limited visual ability. I'm really not sure about all the, 80 vehicles under the speed limit determined by driving beside them, I guess. Connected to that, though, did you hear about the new speed limit signs in Cambridge, 11 of them that were stolen? No, I don't like this 40 kilometer per hour speed limit. I'm stealing the sign. That's great. The problem is we're all just going to have to pay to replace the sign, like we paid to have the sign posted in the first place. I got to get you to the 570 News Center for an update. I got to get you to Now You Know with Rob Snow. Colin Robertson is our guy on the other side of the glass. My name is Mike Farwell. Bye for now.